Busy show, wrapping up a busy week and month on WICC 600 on Connecticut Today on Friday, July 31st. We spoke at length a bit about what the CIA may try and do with fall sports in Connecticut, particularly high school football in our area. Author Andy Mulvihill joined us in the 3 o'clock hour. His father was the driving force behind Action Park, a crazy amusement park in New Jersey that operated for a couple of decades. A lot of folks went there just to see if they could survive. And Stratford GOP State Senator Kevin Kelly joined us in the 5 o'clock hour to talk about his no vote a few days before on the police accountability bill. Hear from a gentleman you hear from time to time here on WICC, host of the WICC Sports Showcase, the ump, Vin Cerullo, is with us. Vin, it's Paul here. How are you, sir?
How you doing, Paul? How long time no speak.
How are you, Vin? So what do you think of what I just read, and what do you think of what the CIAC is going to try and do here?
Well, I think it's a good thing. They've been talking about this for a long time. They had plans, scrapped plans, retalked. So a lot of thought and a lot of effort went into this plan. Of course, the governor and the superintendents around the state all had an input, along with the athletic directors. So, listening to the way it was laid out, I think it makes a lot of sense. The kids need to have some sort of activities, for physical exertion. It's a good thing for their physical being, mental being. It's a camaraderie ship that has been lost over the past few months because of this stupid virus. And, as far as fans go, well, that's a touchy subject.
Yeah.
In the respect of, each district's going to do their own thing, what they feel comfortable with. And I think that makes sense as well. I think the CIAC did an outstanding job putting this together.
Yeah, and Vin, I'm happy, and myself having covered high school sports for years a while back, I'm happy that at least some of these kids, some of these guys and gals going into their senior year won't be left with the disappointment, hopefully if this goes okay, of missing out on their senior year, whether it's cross country or football or whatever, at least in the fall. If for nothing more, Vin, than you say, the camaraderie. And let's face it, some of these kids may be getting looked at for college scholarships, no matter on what level. And that's important.
Oh, absolutely. No question about it. And it's a shame that the spring sports were lost because of this virus. And you talk about the seniors. I feel sorry for those seniors who weren't able to participate, in their final year.
Mm.
They worked hard for 3 years to get to that spot as seniors whether it be softball or baseball or spring soccer, that kind of thing. And, look at basketball was cut off, right at the start of the playoffs.
Yeah.
Same thing with hockey. That's a loss. I mean, how often, and I'm sure you do too, I know I do, when we sit down and talk about with relatives or friends, hey, remember this happened in high school? Remember that game or remember this game? That's all lost, and that's something that you're never going to get it back, unfortunately. But I think the CIAC did a great job here.
And also, the not only the family aspect, Vin, of just in a particular immediate family of a male or female high school athlete, but the camaraderie that goes with the families just seeing each other at these games. I mean, over the years, I've seen it, you've seen it, where you get the same.
Yep.
And who knows what they're going to do with crowds, whether there's going to be social distancing, there may be no crowds. But the bonding that goes on at a basketball game, at a hockey game, at a baseball, softball game, football game, where you get that kind
tremendous.
Of cadre of parents and families who basically sit together for 4 years.
Yes, my younger son played hockey through the youth level, high school level, and collegiately, and we still bump into parents, and it's a great, hey, how you doing? It's a great time reminiscing. You make so many friendships, through even Little League, through baseball, for those who play that sport, when they start young. down, how many friendships that are started and continue on through the rest of your life from those sports.
Yeah, so Vin, let's cross our fingers and hopefully the CIAC can pull this off, and because it would be sad if these kids again, like the previous class, as you said, Vin, maybe missed out on their senior year athletic activities. The ump, Vin Cerullo from WICC. Vin, thank you. Appreciate the call.
Great call talking to you. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Vin. Bye-bye. Vin Cerullo, host of the High School Sports Showcase with the ump, Vin Cerullo on WICC. So we'll see what happens. I mean, hopefully they can pull this off. The phrase Action Park might mean something to you. It was an amusement park, a water park. It had water slides. It had go-karts. It had things to an extent that you would be hard-pressed to find today. I never went there, but I would look at the commercials and go, wow, like they're allowing that. And I have friends that went there and said, yes, I got out. The author of the new book is with us right now. Andy Mulvihill is the author of Action Park, Fast Times, Wild Rides, and the Untold Story of America's Most Dangerous Amusement Park. Andy, welcome to WICC. I don't think you could market that today that way. That's just my guess.
Well, Paul, I have to say it's so great to be on your show. I've been looking forward to this all week. And, man, aren't you right? It is, you know, this book is such an escape from all the craziness that's going on today. And, you know, it just brings you back to a great time where the world was much different. And, you know, Action Park was really unique. It was a place where you could, in one day, you could drive a race car, a tank, a speedboat, go down a toboggan down the mountain. You could go on a water slide with a jump or even an inverted water slide with a 360-degree loop. It was crazy. It wasn't like a typical amusement park. It was like a participation park where you controlled the action. You were the one that decided whether you're going to go fast or slow, and people just love the place, man.
Yeah. Now you're the son of Gene Mulvihill, and this idea came to your dad. I mean, how did Action Park come about?
You know, my dad was a serial entrepreneur. He was in a million different businesses, and he had to lend some guys some money that had a ski area called Vernon Valley. Mm-hmm. They couldn't pay him back, so they gave him the keys. And he looked at the business and he said, you know, I got this lodge and the parking lot and this mountain, and I'm only open for 4 months, 4 or 5 months during the ski season. Yeah. What do I do with it the rest of the time? So we started with putting some rides in. He put in an alpine slide, and he put in some bumper boats. He put in a skateboard park, and he added and added and added. And before he knew it, we had this massive amusement park. But he took a very unique approach. He could not compete with the budgets of the likes of Great Adventure or Disney. So he had to do something unique. And his take was, let's have a participation park. Let's have rides that will really give people a thrill. And that's what he did to great success.
You know, part of the videos I'm watching, we should mention to people, there's a documentary on it, too. You have the book. And I have friends of mine, you know, about my age, Andy, in the broadcast business, who were, you know, when your book came out and when the documentary came out, the trailer, my social media was burning up going, oh, my God, I went there and I got out without hurting myself. That's kind of a tongue-in-cheek joke, Andy, but you know, some of the things that your dad put in, that 360 water pipe, tanks that shot tennis balls. I mean, this stuff to me was kind of, okay, that's kind of cool, but it was unique for that time, as you say.
Yeah, you know, he took the idea of skiing and applied it to an amusement park. So if you want to go skiing on the bunny hill, go slow and be careful, you can. But if you want to go up to the steeps and ski in the trees or the moguls and go fast, man, it's thrilling. But there's risks associated with it, and you can get hurt. He wasn't afraid to let people make that decision. He was really a guy, a real American pioneer, kind of making it up as he went along. But he was willing to let people have a thrill, and if you got knocked around a little bit, he was okay with it.
Andy, I love that. Andy, hang on. We got to take a break here. Name of the book is Action Park, Fast Times, Wild Rides, and the Untold Story of America's Most Dangerous Amusement Park. Andy Mulvihill is the guest. Andy, stand by. Back to you momentarily. First, traffic and weather together on the 6s here at WICC. Andy Mulvihill is our guest, continuing here, author of Action Park, Fast Times, Wild Rides, and the story, the untold story of America's most dangerous amusement park. Andy, you said your dad, Gene, had several business ventures, and obviously, you know, he, I would think, had been around lawyers for years. Was there a moment, or were there people around him, Andy, who went to your father and said, "You can't do that ride. You can't, the 360 water pipe, the high speed thing. You can't do this. You'll get sued." Did anybody say that, or did he not care?
Oh man, his kids said that to him. I can't tell you how many times. You know, we were the kids. He was the adult, and he'd come up with some idea. We're like, "Dad, you can't do that." But you got to understand, he was fearless. He was absolutely fearless. He was very confident. He was willing to take chances, and he was not willing to settle. He had to do something people hadn't seen before. He had to give people such a thrill that they just would go crazy for the place. And it happened. I mean, you'd see a guy walk in there with his girlfriend, and he would figure it was going to be a quiet day, and then he'd see these rides. His eyes would light up, and then he'd be back the next week, not with his girlfriend, but 10 of his craziest friends. And they tear the place up. It was just a crazy place.
And it went for what, 20 years you guys were open? 20 and change years, is that right?
Yeah, 20-year run. It was awesome.
Were there changes made? Did your father have to tone it down? Did you, as the family, were there changes made because of liability, because of injuries, because of any bad press? Or was it pedal to the metal, Andy, right from the beginning to the end?
You know, he really never let up. What we did do is we learned, you know. We learned, as I said, he's a pioneer. Some of this stuff hadn't been done before. Water parks were pretty new when he started his.
Yeah.
So, you know, we learned how to make things safer. We learned how to lifeguard the water better. We put in more pumps for cleaner water, more chlorination, did all that. But we also learned how to manage the accidents in terms of the lawsuits. Like, when someone would get hurt, we'd interview them. And like 9 out of 10 times, they'd say, "Well, I wasn't following directions, or I was screwing around, or I tried to jump on my buddy's head." Now, where we screwed up and we were wrong and we made mistakes, we would pay right away. There were no lawyers. We would just pay the guy his expenses. We'd take care of it. But where we thought we were right and we couldn't, you know, work things out with the guy, we'd go all the way to the end. We would not settle. We would fight. And we won most of the lawsuits. It was really quite something. Our lawyers became famous. None of the trip and fall guys wanted to sue because they knew that we would, you know, just defend to the end of the day.
Well, my guess is, Andy, that your part of your defense may be, hey, you walked in here, you came here, you eyeballed this ride, you made a conscious decision after looking at this ride, right? And, you know, we warned you. I'm guessing you won on several of those.
Yeah, so the Alpine Slide was a toboggan ride where you could control how fast you went. And we said, if you don't control your speed, you can come off of this and you can get burns and you can hurt yourself. We even had pictures that showed the burns you could get. And most people went down if they were fine, but there were a few crazies that went too fast. They came off and they got what we used to call the Action Park tattoo, where you'd get a deep scrape on your arm and that'd leave a scar. There's, I can't tell you how many people we have marked up or walking around New Jersey today.
Well, I got to tell you, again, like I said, Andy, and the guest is Andy Mulvihill, name of the book, Action Park, Fast Times, Wild Rides, and the Untold Story of America's Most Dangerous Amusement Park. I can't tell you the number of my friends from the greater New York area who, you know, I was messaging with, knowing I was going to have you on, saying, "Oh, my God, I scraped up my elbow here. My cousin, you know, skinned up his knee," but we loved it. And I've seen in some of the chatter for the book here and for the documentary, you've got people like Judd Apatow, Jimmy Kimmel, some of these Hollywood or entertainment A-types who went there and they have memories of it. Nobody has forgotten that place.
No, in fact, you know, they did do a short documentary on Mashable a few years ago, and I know that the Johnny Knoxville's producer showed it to him, and that actually inspired Knoxville to do a movie that was loosely based on it. And I talked to Knoxville, and he couldn't believe, I mean, I couldn't get him off the phone. He's like, "You could really do whatever you wanted there. You could jump on people's heads and do anything." I'm like, "Yeah, my father was, He's like, that's great. And it's kind of funny because it's like my father was the precursor to Johnny Knoxville. You know, he's doing it before him, but precursor to the X Games and all that crazy stuff. People do that stuff today. They just don't do it in amusement parks anymore.
Yeah, and Andy, that's kind of what I was going to ask you next. I've always thought that entertainment, be it radio, TV, movies, live performances, recording artists, and even maybe amusement parks, don't you think they reflect the times? I mean, the 70s and early to mid-80s, I mean, no social media, no smartphones. People just wanted to get out and not be a cyber creature, right? It was like, let's experience what we experience, and this is what life is.
Yeah, you know, I think you're right about that. But I don't mean to be self-serving by saying this, but my dad was a really unique guy. And without him and his gusto and his willingness to take risks, the place never would exist. It never would have existed either before or after. So it was really, you know, when you have an entrepreneur that's willing to do something above and beyond, special things happen. And it just created an environment that was unbelievable. I have to warn your people there that are listening. If you get this book,
yeah,
do not read it in public because you will embarrass yourself. I've had so many friends. I was at a party last night. I didn't know half the people there. Most of them had read it because it's local. They're like, you laugh so loud during this book all the time. People look at you like you're nuts. You know, most people have one action park story if they've been there. I have hundreds, and I picked the best ones. They will blow your mind. I mean, I was a young guy. I was 16, 17,
yeah,
working there. I was in charge of all the lifeguards, pretty girls everywhere. There were parties at night. We had a brewery there. I never ran out of beer. It was awesome.
Andy, hang on. Andy Mulvihill is the guest. We'll do one more segment with him. His dad started Action Park. Name of the book, Action Park, Fast Times, Wild Rides, and the Untold Story of America's Most Dangerous Amusement Park. Yes, dangerous. And if you grew up in this area, mid to late 70s, early to mid 80s, you saw the Action Park commercials on New York television. Andy, hang on. Traffic and weather together. 3:46 on WICC. Name of the book, Action Park, Fast Times, Wild Rides, and the Untold Story of America's Most Dangerous Amusement Park. It's available wherever you buy books. Andy Mulvihill is the author. His dad, entrepreneur, started and maintained Action Park for the better part of 20 years or so. Andy, the Cannonball Loop. Is it an urban legend, or did your maintenance guys, your engineers, did they actually find teeth in this thing?
Yes, that did happen once, I hate to admit. You know, that ride we never really perfected. I was actually the first one down that.
Were you really?
In the parking lot, yeah. So imagine it was a tube, like a big steel tube that had padding in the inside of it. And it, like a slick vinyl paint, and water would run down it through little tubes. And the thing was super steep, like really steep and long. And you would jump into the pitch black hole. I did it. I did it with my hockey equipment on the first time. And you'd go down the thing, and all of a sudden you'd hit the loop. But rather than the loop being on the side like water slides today, it went vertical. So you went all the way, like your stomach went through your throat, and you'd go all the way up, and you'd be pinned if you're going fast enough on the top of the tube. But what would happen is if you weren't going fast enough, you'd fall from the top of the tube to the bottom of the tube, and you could smack your face. And apparently one day, it's really not funny, one day when we were...
Yes, it is. Go ahead.
It
is. It's funny. Go ahead.
Well, when we opened it, and it was only open for a little bit of time when we figured out it just wasn't working. Somebody fell from the top and they smacked their face and a tooth got stuck in the foam. We didn't know that. The next guy went and he came out with like a cut back, a lacerated back. The next guy went and he had we couldn't figure out how they were lacerating their back till a maintenance guy crawled in there and he found the tooth. It's unbelievable.
Did you ever return the tooth?
I don't know, man. I don't know what happened to that tooth.
Yeah, and I see that, you know, your dad had plans for rides that were made, that were not made. What did I see here? There was a plan for some bullet ride, the Sky Caliber. What was that?
Oh, he had so many rod ideas. He actually came up with the idea of zip lines before they were ever done. That one he had drawn on paper. He didn't get around to doing it. He had another one called the Death Dive, where you would build a huge, super high tower, and you just jump off it into the air, and very slowly you would have the wall would start to slant till it became perpendicular. But we couldn't do it because it would have to be like 2,000 feet high to do it right. That didn't get – and then the craziest one, he was partners in – he actually went into the roller coaster business with a guy, Stan Checkett, that he had the bungee towers. We had bungee jumps with airbags at Action Park. But this guy, Stan, got into pneumatic air to propel rides, and he had the idea of shooting people using the compressed air – out of a cannon, like the clowns in the circus, 100 yards through the air, landing either in a net or a pool. And Stan pitched me on that after my father died. He wanted me to go in with him on Vegas and do it. And I just don't have the guts my old man did. I don't know if Stan's going to do that. So if you see people flying through the air in Vegas, you know where it came from.
And yet, Andy, even if you did that, or even if something like Action Park was open today, somebody would try it, right? Don't we, I mean, honestly, if you want to get philosophical about this, don't you look back and say, people just like to push limits, don't they, in places like that?
Yeah, they do, you know, you got to, like, differentiate between, like, pushing the limit where it's just you're just doing because you're taking a chance of getting hurt versus pushing the limit to do something that really is fun to do and feels neat. Like, we have this ride called Surf Hill, which was a water slide with a jump. And if you really got going fast enough and used your body right, you could soar through the air. You'd land on something really steep that was really padded, didn't hurt. That was so much fun. We'd have guys that would come up there, and that's all they would do all day, just to see how – high and far. I learned to do double flips on the thing. It was fun, man. It was a thrill. Place was awesome.
What is Action Park today? What is on that land today? How is the area functioning now?
So when we got out of it in 96, it was bought by Interwest, which is a big skier developer. They got rid of, they took down half the park because they wanted to do a ski village. They left a little water park there, which is kind of still there now. But if you want to see my father's legacy alive and well, we had moved on to like an adult Action Park. Mm-hmm. We have a resort called Crystal Springs Resort with 6 golf courses, spas.
Nice.
And an incredible collection of wine. It's a cool spot, and there's some great architecture there. A fun place. So you can check out and see what my dad's spirit's kind of alive there. My sister and I run the place.
Final question, Andy. If some international conglomerate came to you and said, Andy, we're watching all these old movies and videos. We've read your book. We have $1 billion. We want you to make a new Action Park. Do you think that could happen today? Money aside, do you think that you could successfully run something like that today?
Well, I guess if we did it in Abu Dhabi and the prince controlled the lawsuits, heck yeah. But I don't know, man. Without my dad's pioneering spirit and his creativity, it would be hard to do it. But I tell you what, you find the money, I'll give it a shot, dude.
All right, you got it. Andy Mulvihill. Andy, thank you. He's the author of Action Park, Fast Times, Wild Rides, and the Untold Story of America's Most Dangerous Amusement Park. It was in New Jersey, smaller water park now on that site. Pick up the book, folks, published by Penguin in paperback. Went on sale June 30th, wherever you get your books. Andy, thank you. It's been fun. Hopefully down the line we'll talk. Thanks, man.
All right, Paul. Thanks, buddy.
Be good. Kevin Kelly of Stratford. Kevin, how are you?
I'm pretty good. Yourself, Paul?
I'm all right, Kevin. I'm all right. Well, only one Democrat defected, I guess the word is. So instead of being a straight party line vote, 22-14, it was 21-50. No surprise, Joan Hartley, who oftentimes bucks her party, she voted no. So it was 21-15. I know you were among the 15 no votes on the police accountability bill. Kevin, number one, what was the debate like? And number two, what were your reasons particularly, tell us, for voting no?
Well, Paul, the debate was an 11-hour debate, and it went from about 5 p.m. in the afternoon to 4 a.m. in the morning, which, you know, I don't understand why the majority party always wants to do things after business hours and after everybody else goes to bed. But that's what happened here. Predominantly, my reason for voting no is that the bill is going to make policing more expensive, and it's going to make it our neighborhoods less safe. And at the end of the day, that's the one thing that I think government must do, is to make sure that our communities, our neighborhoods are safe and secure. And this bill doesn't do that.
Kevin,
go ahead.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. No, I was just going to say on the big elephant in the room here is obviously the immunity clause here, or the qualified immunity for cops. And Kevin, I'm speaking to you now. I've spoken to other Republicans. I've spoken to Democrats, and there really, Kevin, does seem to be a significant difference as to how this immunity change is going to affect men and women in law enforcement. I've heard, well, it's just a slight adjustment and brings it back to what qualified immunity could be. And then I've heard, no, this is a radical change. I've heard Democrats tell me, well, cops probably shouldn't have to carry excess, liability coverage, because the cities and towns will still cover them in most cases. I've heard Republicans on your side say, but that's going to cost more money. What's your thought on that?
Well, I don't think the debate is really being candid and frank with regards to what the real cost is going to be. I mean, it's not the way the system works. If they're bringing this now right to sue police officers, that's good cops with bad cops. And so what that means is that if you think you've been treated unfairly, you can bring the action. They'll give you the lip service that they're only going to, the towns could or may or may not be able to indemnify. But the fact of the matter is, once they sue the town, they're going to also have to sue on the police officers, a one-year statute of limitation, and lawyers are going to do that. And usually when they bring these actions, they don't just bring the one cop who showed up, but any partner that may have been there, a desk sergeant, anybody that was involved in the case. And even if you're just going to defend, even if it's a frivolous lawsuit, you're going to have to defend that, and it's going to be an increase, added cost in the police force, and it's going to make police officers double clutch. Are they going to respond timely and fast? Because all they're going to be thinking of is, well, am I going to violate somebody's rights along the way? At the end of the day, what this will do is increase the cost of policing, make make it less safe in our neighborhoods.
What does it say, Kevin, that the qualified immunity change doesn't kick in for a year, which I found that kind of interesting. I don't recall, maybe there was, forgive me if I don't know, but I don't recall a lot of legislation that waits over a year to take effect of any import like this. You know, is this kind of a, well, let's pass something now deal because the election is coming up, and if it proves to be really bad, if officers start quitting left and right, we can always pull the plug on it and then look like heroes? Was that the intent of the one-year timeout on this?
Well, it makes you wonder, Paul. It really does, because the effective date isn't until next July 1st. And that makes the November election all that more important.
Yeah.
Because if you believe that what was done by the Democrats is appropriate and the right thing, you can vote to put them in office. If you think that it wasn't the right thing, that you do want safe neighborhoods, then you can vote for Republicans and send them to Hartford to make a change to that law. Let's keep in mind, too, Paul, that this wasn't just about, what we're trying to accomplish here is not just police bill, but also there was a social justice aspect to this, and to bring different perspectives so that we can deal with the abuses of policing in our neighborhoods. It exists. It's not like it this came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say 90% of the bill, everyone agreed with. It's just this aspect of the qualified immunity where everything falls apart. We could have done a lot of things at improving in this area. The majority party chose not to do it that way, and for whatever reason.
Kevin, thank you. We appreciate it. Good to get your thoughts on that. Stratford GOP State Senator Kevin Kelly. Kevin, thanks, and we'll be in touch. Be good. Have a good weekend.
Take care, Paul.
Stay safe. Batten down the hatches. We'll talk to you next week. Thanks.